welcome to another episode of the Maiden Mother and Crone podcast. My name is Aradia LaCroix, your maiden and mistress of ceremonies. As of right now, I am going solo until I can get hold of Dawn, and Tish Owen should be joining me shortly. There she is.
Hello.
Hello, Mama Tish. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, that is... I'm getting over a cold, so my voice is a little rough today, and we have a toddler running around upstairs, so there's noise, and I do apologize for that to our listeners. I'm pretty sure something has come up with Dawn, and she will let me know what's going on. But I have called and messaged her. She's had a lot of stuff going on recently, and we're helping her try to work through it. But if everyone is completely okay with it, I am more than happy to continue the show with our guest tonight, who I've been looking forward to speaking to because she's so interesting and her biography has blown me away.
It really is. She's very interesting.
Yes. So, Jay Zohara Meyerhoff Hieronymus is an award-winning radio broadcaster, author, social justice, environmental, and animal activist. She is a pioneer in holistic health care as founder of the Ruscombe Mansion Community Health Center in Baltimore, Maryland, in 1985. Zoe has been called a visionary and futurist and is, as well, a trans-species telepath who communicates with animals both wild and domestic. Zohara is well known for her participation in consciousness studies, the spiritual science of self-mastery as described in Kabbalah, and is a broadcasting personality hosting numerous radio shows over the past 30 years, continuing with her husband, Dr. Rob, to host 21st Century Radio since its founding in 1986. Zoe is author of Kabbalistic Teachings of the Female Prophets, The Seven Holy Women of Ancient Israel, Sanctuary of the Divine Presence, Hebraic Rituals of Initiation and Illumination, The Future of Human Experience, White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change, which is the we will be speaking mostly about tonight. Dr. Zohara, thank you so much for being here with us. We are completely honored to have you on.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I can hear your voice that you, honey, lemon, and hot tea would be great. Well, you know, when people ask me what all these different things have in common, the books I wrote about Kabbalah or the prophets, and then a book I wrote about the future of human experience based in 30 years of interview work of new paradigm scientists and philosophers and artists, etc. What they all share in common is spirit, trying to live a life following spirit, listening to spirit, and doing what spirit asks of us. You know, some people would say, well, that you mean intuition, and that's a part of it. But it also is a sense of listening carefully, and I'm sure your audience are very practiced at this work because certainly the pagan and indigenous traditions are all about spirit and being open, as I mentioned, intuition is part of it, but so is a rich imagination, and so is humility, and so is courage, interestingly enough. And those are the three things that the prophets of ancient Israel were said to share in common, and how they would be trained is that the elders would look for people with rich imaginations, humility, and courage. And the rich imagination, people go, well, what does that have to do with telepathy and prophecy and intuition and following the spirit? And the reason it is we live in a culture that doesn't appreciate that imagination is the realm from which all causal body, all thought originate. So it's the ability to hold an image and impress it in matter. It's like taking and hearing spirit's instruction and then being able to imagine what one hears, then having the courage to follow it or to share it or to do it, and the humility to appreciate that it's coming from outside of ourselves and that we are simply vessels through which spirit can animate matter. so when I went to write this particular book, as I note in my book, White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change, which I began writing in 2014, it was very much as a result, as are all my books and all of my career choices. Every 10 years, I've pretty much changed my focus of life work. They're all in the arts, the performing arts, the fine arts, the communication arts, the esoteric arts, etc., is that I would have these visions, and this goes back to having the courage to following spirit, and then try to do what I was shown. And sometimes it would take years. So in this case, in 2013, while I was washing dishes at home, sounds like a Zen story, but it is the truth, I had a waking day vision of myself standing in the woods on our property surrounded by a great number of what are called white spirit animals, a white shark, a white lion, a white elephant, a white bear, a white wolf, a white buffalo, and many others. And I was shocked. I mean, I think I can honestly say I was in a bit of shock myself. I was certainly aware that this was a very special moment in consciousness, and I felt like I was before revered elders. So I asked them, you know, very specifically, why have you come to me? You know, what can I do for you? As you would if you saw a revered elder who came and stood before you. It's the same thing when you work in spirit and you're comfortable with your visions and you can tell the difference between projecting something and receiving something. You can sense when other beings are trying to talk to you and they may not be in their physical bodies. You know, animals can see spirit bodies and ghosts and doubles and all those kinds of things, and humans not as well, unless you practice at it or gifted at it or live in an indigenous culture that really conditions you to be able to do this. So what they told me was they wanted me to tell their story and to tell it collectively, not to write a book about a bear and then a book about a lion, because they said if I were to look at them as a group, I'd better understand what they're trying to share with humanity. And that's what I did. So for a year before I even made a proposal to my publisher, Inner Traditions Bear & Company, a fantastic publisher, I spent a year dreaming with the animals because I decided, though I'm a waking telepath where somebody will give me the name of their animal and I'll do a reading, generally not in the presence of either the people or the animal. I'm better at a distance in most of the work I do, because there's less interference, either emotionally or even energetically, statically. And in this particular instance, I would take a month and dream with one animal. So before I'd go to sleep at night, and this can be done for anything, as I'm sure other guests and you as hosts have talked about, there's a way to use dreaming for telepathy. And so I wanted to see if I could do it. It's a very deep, rich part of the shamanic practices in the indigenous cultures, as it always has been, which is we can dream information for healing for ourselves, for family members, for our society, for our rivers, for the air, you know, for a question we're struggling with about our own development or about a marriage or a work relationship, anything. It just means focusing your attention before you go to sleep at night on that which you are trying to communicate with. So if it's a deceased loved one, you get out a picture of them, you hold them close to your heart, you call their name a couple of times, and really try to feel what it feels like when the love of that being, that person, that tree, that bird, whatever it is you're trying to communicate with, what it feels like when you come into loving communion with them. And then you go to sleep. And you try to wake yourself up during the night when you get information and you jot it down. A lot of times you won't remember to do that, but after you practice a while, you'll do it a lot, I promise. And you may not always know what it means. Like you could say, well, I'm going to dream about bear, and then you have a dream about a book that you had as a child. And you might go, well, that has nothing to do with bear. And then you go and you find it, and you discover at the very back it said, be good, little bear, you know, even though it was a story about blue jays. So I would just say to people that when you try to practice dream telepathy, whether it's with a totem animal or someone you love that passed on or whatever it is you're reaching to try to come into rapport with, is to just take all of it as being of value. And people will say, well, how do you know if it's right or wrong? And I'm really of the opinion that it doesn't matter. because this isn't a test. It's a journey. And there is no wrong if what you're trying to do is coming to love and rapport with some other being entity, whether it's a mineral, a plant, an animal, a weather system, a human. Because if our intention is to come into loving rapport, something good will come into focus. Something good happens just from that loving intention, even if we can't measure it, we don't know what it is. And so that's sort of the backdrop to the faith I had to have in dreaming with the animals, assuming that the animals will show me through dreams what was important to them, and that I would also do the regular normative, you know, left brain study of the elder traditions, of the biology of the animals, of their methods of communication and hibernation, and how they eat and how long they live, and those kinds of normative things. But the gist of the book, White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change, is that the animals themselves basically are telling us to save as many of them as we can. You know, these are all apex guardians, which means they're at the top of their ecosystem. And they unfortunately tend to be the very mammals, bear, lion, elephant, wolf, and buffalo, that men in particular like to kill the most. So it's a predicament that we're in.
Okay, so that was really my question was, why did they come to you? Why did they want you to speak for them? And that is the answer. We're killing them, and we're not honoring them.
Yeah, that and the ecosystems they live in. It's interesting because whether it's the Zulu people speaking about the white lion or the Cherokee talking about the white wolf or Buddhist and Hindus talking about the white elephant, they all recognize these mammals as kin. They're not less than us. They're not beneath us. They shouldn't be subject to us. These are collaborating entity species that have sentience, that have culture, that have community, that have history, that have preferences, likes, dislikes, joy, sorrow, grieving, pain, pleasure, foods they like, places they like to go. All these things that we associate with specifically humans and human society. But the truth is, and the indigenous peoples that I mentioned are just some of them who revere these animals, say that they are white-coated to remind us of the last glacial age, and that they only come and make their appearance before humans when the earth itself is going to cleanse herself, when we are in trouble, which we are in. And so the white animals, which most indigenous peoples, if they saw a white buffalo, they never told an outsider that one existed or where they were. If, you know, the British Columbian natives saw white bears, they certainly didn't tell the white hunters who came across the continent as colonialists or were from wherever they were and tell them. So it's only really since the 1940s or 50s or so that the white spirit animals worldwide, and now much more prevalently, is it known about because of the online connectivity. You know, somebody who sees a white crocodile can post it and millions of people will see it and become aware of it. Somebody else can post a white giraffe or white buffalo or... So anyway, some of the white animals that people love, and they are beautiful because they're rare, so, and they're vulnerable so that they survive is unique. But humans are changed by them, and we know that just by reading elder tradition of how revered they are. You know, the white elephant is considered holy, and as an example, in certain continents, only the king can own them. And they're considered holy and don't have to do the work that the other elephants have to do. It's considered by those in Burma who worship them that they will have performed other actions for humans in other lifetimes. And an elder will come in and read the elephant's past lives to see whether it merits being in the king's stable of a royal white elephant. So it's like each of these holy animals are regarded as teachers in the cultures in which they exist.
And there's, I mean, I know that I've read about some of the white animals being born, and of course you have to think about the trophy hunters who would love to put that on their wall. So are they protected in the countries where they're being born?
Unfortunately, not always. Now, I have to say the white bear and the white bear rainforest now is an enormous project to preserve the white bear. Hunting is forbidden of them, and they're protected, as is the rainforest that they inhabit, which is such a critical rainforest for the planet. So the Canadian people and the First Native peoples and other activists have done a beautiful job there. The white lions are extremely vulnerable, and they're bred in captivity to be killed in captivity. And we have, you know, an insane administration who approves of anything that undermines any vulnerable population, human or animal, and that's just the wicked sickness of this human being we call our president. So the rolling back that they've just done of forbidding, for instance, ivory and the decimation of elephants, they are extremely threatened. I mean, we're in an enormous species decline. I don't think the press talks about it much, but we're in what's called the sixth extinction. It's the largest extinction since the dinosaurs, basically. And there was a report, you know, that came out in 2014 by the World Wildlife Fund. And I remember when I read it, I was shocked. I mean, I'm an activist, and I'm pretty informed in comparison to the general public because I've done this since I was 14. I'm now in my mid-60s. So when I was surprised, I know if I'm surprised, most people don't know this, but we lose 27,000 species a year now. Used to be a background rate of 1 to 10. So between 1970 and 2010, we lost 52% of all our mammals, our birds. I mean, it's amazing. Our reptiles, our amphibians, our fish. So now they're saying within 30 years, 50% of all Earth species will have gone extinct. So when I learned this, it made more sense to me why these elder white spirit animals, who really are prophets of their kin species, said save as many of us as you can. And when you think about it, they preside over rainforests, they preside over the African savannas, they preside over our fields and woodlands, they preside over the prairies, they preside over the deserts. There's really not an ecosystem in which these mammals don't preside over. And of course, we have the whale and the porpoise over our seas, etc. So it's very important that all of us do our best to help the organizations and individuals that are really working to preserve the habitats of our wild animals, because without them, the ecosystems collapse.
How can we help?
Well, again, one of the things, as I show on my website at www.whitespiritanimals.com, I provide links to organizations and individuals, for instance, those I profile in the book, who are doing their best to protect a given species by really educating the public and who have made lifelong commitments to them. Like, for instance, there's a group called the White Bison Association, and you can go online and Google that. And the woman who founded it, Cynthia Hart Button, is part Lakota and part Welsh, and she has spent the last 16 years of her life as a result, again, of following spirit, listening to spirit talk, becoming the caretaker of a herd of primarily white buffalo, and they are genetically pure white buffalo. You know, people think we have a lot of buffalo again. Well, we used to have 60 million, and the government set about killing them off as a way to exact genocide on the native population at the same time. And that was really the strategy, and why they killed off the buffalo was to kill off the native people at the same time and imprison them, which they did. But most of the buffalo now are hybrid that are made by breeders between cattle and buffalo. So the purebred buffalo are very important because they're really the axis of the center of the northern continent, and always were. They restore the soil. They keep desert from they keep prairie from becoming desert, and they keep, you know, grassy areas really fertile, and they turn the soil over the same way elephants do, the same way other herd animals do that I've talked about in the book. And so they're very important, and they restore the soul. I mean, the buffalo for, and the nice thing is President Obama named the buffalo the national mammal of the United States to accompany the eagle. And it's a wonderful sign of fulfilling Lakota prophecy that the buffalo would rise again. And so here we are, 100 years after almost their complete near extinction, and now we're doing our best to try to protect them. Though much of it is used for the buffalo meat industry, and they're treated like cattle, which is injurious to their spirit because they're really meant to be wild, free-roaming buffalo.
Right.
Bison is their technical name. And we have enough contingent lands and enough private land owners and states who would be happy to do it, but the federal government is in the way of that happening.
What? Why do they... I don't know that I understand why are they in the way. Why are they, what does it profit the federal government?
It's because the cattle industry doesn't want to share the grazing lands with buffalo. And they claim that, you know, for some reason that they breed, and they don't. They will not breed. They're in near the Henry Mountains in Utah. There's been seven generations of buffalo and cattle living side by side without any interbreeding. So there's a lot of fallacy, and there's a lot of money invested in the beef industry in this country.
Right.
And that's where that comes from. But, you know, the thing about the book that I wrote, The White Spirit Animals and Prophets of Change, another interesting thing about all of them is they're representing cosmic systems. You know, these aren't just animals that are loved by animal lovers. We're talking about millions of people over centuries of time honoring these animals, like the lion, for instance, in the Sumerian and Babylonian and Mesopotamian cultures. The lion was still regarded as the guardian of the planet. From an alchemical point of view, the lion teaches us about our pure-heartedness, about refining our natures so that we can become noble-hearted guardians of the planet. And so you would see back in those old cultures pictures of the Queen of Heaven with two lions on a leash, you know, or lions would guard royalty. So there's always been this association with lions as being our teachers of royalty and nobility and protection, and that is their purpose. A good example of some changes in Africa of the Maasai, who as a peoples would kill lions as an initiation to manhood. And now there's a group that was started by two women where the Maasai teach their young men to track the lions and save the lions and protect the lions as the noble-hearted initiation rather than killing them. So what's interesting to me, like in the white bear, there's now ecotourism to support the white bear, to take pictures of the white bear. And while some animal activists don't like ecotourism, they say it's still an infringement on the autonomy and ecosystems of these animals. My feeling is it's a lot better to look at an animal than to kill it. So it's a step in the right direction. And what they're finding in every instance in which they have stopped killing an animal and instituted ecotourism, like they have of the elephant, the community makes far more money and no injury is done, and it's elevating. So it becomes like a life economy instead of a death economy. So it's there, you know, I'm very hopeful. I know there's good reason to be pessimistic, and I don't, I'm not naive about the fact that our earth is in a really tipsy-turvy way in terms of its own wellness, and the earth will do what she has to do to heal herself, even if it means getting rid of a good portion of humans and other life on Earth. But we still have the obligation, no matter what happens, to do our best to preserve and to restore the Earth. And so, like, one of the things Wolf said to me over a series of dreams, he showed me this empty truck that an African-American gentleman was going to drive into these food deserts around the country in the cities. And it hadn't been filled up yet. In one dream, it was called preservation. And in another dream, it was called restoration. And in a third dream, it was called conservation. And I couldn't figure out what it meant. And then finally, I got it after the third dream. If you rearrange the letters, it spelled CPR. The earth is CPR. So we do need conservation, preservation, and restoration. But Wolf was telling me, we're in dire straits. The earth needs CPR, pulmonary resuscitation. So I talk in the book about different things the animals have said, like lion. Lion said if they were to pick one ecological improvement we need to do, they said close the ozone hole. They also said close the hole in your heart, you know, that keeps you from knowing that we're all connected and filled with love. And then when you look at the wolf's role cosmically, they're considered to be guardians of the Milky Way Road. And interestingly enough, another mammal written about in White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change, is the white elephant. And the elephant is said to stir the Milky Way. So you have the wolf and the elephant as partners in the cosmos, because the Milky Way is said where all creation comes from. So it's a very interesting thing. And then bear is just, oh my gosh, bear is the medicine healer, chief of medicine. And when I dreamt with Bear, I would follow Bear around in the woods, and they'd show me smoke medicine and smudge medicine. And they say that they are the ones who taught Native Americans all about sage and cedar grass and herbal healing. And when you read the texts and stories of Native peoples, whether Cherokee or Lakota or Sioux, it doesn't matter, they say that. Bear is the healer. Bear taught us how to heal. So it was interesting for me because what I did was I dreamt with the animals before I studied the literature about them. And it was really wonderful to get things confirmed either from elder lore or by interviewing people who actually work with these particular animals. Like one of the things Wolf was insistent on was telling me over a series of nights that, you know, we've got lots of relations. We have really tight relations with coyote, but not fox. They kept going over this, and I kept thinking, like a school teacher, you know, shaking their finger at me. If you understand nothing more, Zohara, you understand that we have relationships with wolf, but not with fox. This is a wolf talking about coyote, rather. And so I thought that was kind of funny. But a few days later, I looked it up online, and sure enough, in terms of their DNA, and then I asked Tamarack Song, who I talk about as a protector of the wolf in general, knowing about tracking and telepathy, and he said, no, it's true that a wolf and coyote have genetic relationship, and most of them interbreed, but they don't have that relationship with fox. So the reason I've gone to lengths to share some of these few stories is to tell you that if you practice telepathic dreaming, just write the stuff down. Don't judge it. Try not to criticize it. Don't doubt anything. Just make a note, like you're a researcher, and universe is giving you clues, and you have to treat it like a little mystery. And that's all it is. It's just a mystery game. Don't take it too seriously. Just know that it's a journey. But I promise you, over time, little stones along the trail will start to make sense of pieces in your dreams. And that's one of the values of why I wrote this book. It wasn't just to tell the animal's story. It was not only to show myself that I could gain information for somebody, whether it's a family member or a stranger who goes, I have a real problem, this is what shamans would do and do to this day. They'll say, well, let me dream about it. And then they'll go dream. And in the dream, they'll ask, as dowsers will ask, which is a really important thing to do when you come into rapport with the elementals and you want to work with the elementals to change the weather, or you want to work with the trees, you know, to improve their health. Is that you're coming into rapport with their life stream and their destiny. So what you ask is, may I, can I, should I? Meaning, may I come into rapport with this species? Can I do this work and should I? So the same thing in telepathic dreaming or telepathy when you're talking to the birds in your backyard. If you hear a bird say, the seed you're putting out is rotted, or gone, you know, bad, pay attention to what you hear. I think one of the challenges for people who go to workshops and are very sincere about wanting to have totem animals and take care of the animals and take care of nature and really come into loving rapport with all of creation is to know that it's, while it's lighthearted and joyful, it is serious. Meaning, if you make a commitment to the birds in your backyard to take care of them, it doesn't mean you do it when you feel like it. And it's the same thing if you make a commitment to the spirit of a wolf, and the wolf comes to you and says, please help my species. It doesn't mean you do it when you feel like it. It means you make a commitment to, you know, supporting wolf organizations or legislation in your state that stops hunting of the wolves. Whatever it is, these aren't light associations. If you call anything in spirit, it is going to come to you, whether you're conscious of it or unconscious of it. And it's very important to just pay honor to the fact that you have asked to come into rapport with the river or with the stone or with the consciousness of the mud or whatever it is you're working with, because it does answer us, because everything is connected through the light that we all are, and our intention is sort of the signal that says, I'm here to help. And then our attention allows us to see what has been brought into our arena. But it's very important to take these requests and commitments seriously, because it's no different than making a commitment to a living person.
Do you think that sometimes, I've got about six questions. Do you think that sometimes
animals show up just seemingly random, for us to pay attention to them and then also to talk to them on a spirit level, but also to take care of them in the real world. One of the oddest things I ever saw was a skunk, but instead of being black with a white stripe down the center, he was white with a black stripe down the middle.
Huh, nice.
And he was so odd because he stopped in the road and looked at me as if to say, "Do you see me?" And then he crossed the road and then turned all the way around and looked at me again. And I did as much research as I could, and it's a mutation. It's not a regular species, but skunk is stand your ground, but also I think that people are not cognizant of skunk and what they need and that they're not mean animals or bad animals. So do you think they show up so that we can work with them on a couple of levels?
I think you got it completely right. I mean, that's
okay.
How I would interpret it. You know, I was trying to save a little bird recently and in the process put some seed out. And when I went to where I put the seed, it kind of flushed it out of its bush. And an owl swept down in front of me and picked that bird up and took it off to eat it. And, of course, you know, I'm like, oh, my God, poor bird. I worked so hard to save you during the day. And then the owl came. So, yeah, both owl came to teach me something, as did this poor little bird who had an injured leg.
I'm not laughing at you, but that
no,
is
No, but you know what I'm
really
saying.
Funny.
So it's oftentimes not what we expect, but I do believe that everything in the universe is a signaling system, and this is what shamans understood, that everything is signaling to everything else, and what we pay attention to is what becomes meaningful. So by your having that experience and paying attention to the experience, it means that you have an opportunity to learn some gift that spirit has brought to you, because we're all connected. Everything on earth is connected. There is nothing that is not connected to the all. So if we consider that that's true, then if you have, you know, you see a person in the grocery store is wearing a red coat, and then that afternoon you see a child in the playground wearing a red coat, and then you go home and, you know, your dog has on a red coat. I can't tell you what that means. I can just tell you that there's
right.
a message in it.
There's a message, and you should pay attention. Well, it was such a deliberate act on the part of this creature that as we were pulling out, he stopped on the side of the road,
yeah.
And, of course, we stopped for him, and he walked very deliberately, stopped in the middle of the road, looked at us, and then went to the side. It was so deliberate.
Yeah.
There was no way to think it was an accident.
No, I think that the animals understand what a challenge we have, and they're always trying to help us. I tell an interesting story. When I first started this work, I came into rapport with a bonobo, the longest-held captive bonobo in the world named Matata. And I met her because I interviewed the chief scientist who worked with her and her children, who became able to use computers to communicate. But the elder bonobo, Matata, didn't want to. And after she found me, you know, she found me because this other human was sort of the bridge that connected us. But my dog could see her. I could see her astrally show up in my bedroom, and my dog could see her too and was really afraid. But after we made this contact, Matata used to just call me on, I joke, she'd call me on the telepathic line. And sometimes I'd answer the telepathic line, and sometimes I'd tell her, you have to call me back later when I get back from grocery shopping. So all of the animals that we bump into, that we happen to note on a TV show, that we see as we drive, I mean, it's really important, and I know you all talk about this when you pass a dead animal on the road to say a very quick prayer to elevate its spirit, because it gave its life up right there in that moment. So spirit is rising right in that place. I think that the animals, another example, not only did Matata tell me things, but I had dreams about all these animals screaming and calling, and it went on for weeks, and it was horrible. It finally stopped after 2 weeks after the tsunami in Japan.
Oh, my gosh.
So they know, though, that animals know before there's earthquakes. In Europe now, they are actually chipping sheep, because the sheep will come down from the mountains before an avalanche or an earthquake. So ants will react before there are volcanoes or earthquakes. So I think humans are beginning to appreciate what indigenous peoples have always understood. Animals are our teachers. You know, Darwin has been inaccurately accused of saying that there's a human species entitlement, that we as humans, we're the top of the order, and we get to use and abuse animals in the earth however we want, whenever we want. And we all know that's not true, even though there's a good portion of humanity that might behave that way currently. It's not moral, it's not ethical, and it's not natural. And so when the animals tell us that they know the earth is imbalanced, they will continue to do the best they can, and they're very noble. And I think that was one of the challenges for me in writing the book, is I had to come into contact with the horrendous suffering we have created for the animal community. You know, we're talking about billions of animals have been tortured, whether we eat them or don't, and our entire academic society is set up on the use and abuse and torture of animals. So is the medical industry. So when you start thinking about the degree to which modern society tortures animals as either food, subjects of research, or as what they like to call sport, but it's basically calculated murder. It's not sport. Sport is teams have the same rules. You play by the same rules. We don't see that in hunting. And it's one thing if you need to eat to stay alive. Animals will gladly give up their life, particularly when they're preyed over. But they understand the industry of what's happening is sheer and complete torture. So the karma of that is real. And, you know, there are all kinds of ways to interpret it, which we don't need to do right now. But I would like to say that for people who feel like it's all too much and they get overwhelmed and there's nothing they can do, let me promise you that positive prayer is one of the most powerful tools we as a humanity have. An elephant taught me that. I had a dream about two men over a period of nights, and I couldn't figure out who they were, though I knew the faces were pretty familiar. And finally, again, another third night dream. I dreamt a lot in threes. I realized who they were. It was Charlie Rose, the radio TV host. And, and the other was Senator John Warner of Virginia. And I'm thinking, well, what do these two guys have to do with elephants? I thought maybe it was from another part of my life when I was a political whistleblower and that maybe it was part of that. So I did a Google several days later, and what came up was Charlie Rose had done a beautiful series on the horrendous and barbaric trade in ivory and elephant parts and the barbarism of our murdering and slaughtering their herds in front of the babies. I mean, it's just horrendous what we do. And the other was Charlie Rose had come into, John Warner, Senator of Virginia, had come into contact with a Barnum & Bailey elephant named Jewel when he went to his alma mater and they were having a mock convention. And I include the picture in my book, White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change. And you can see how tender and touched he was. So elephant Jewel was basically telling me that when any one of us do a deed of kindness or have an act of love or a prayer of goodness for somebody else, it is remembered by that species, by that individual, and by the universe. And interestingly enough, Rudolf Steiner, the great anthroposophist, says the same thing. So if you ever feel hopeless, overwhelmed, and helpless about what's going on in Earth, stop for a moment and just say a prayer for divine right order. You know, dear Lord, or dear Creator Spirit, or dear big whatever, you know, might there be divine right order? You know, the Spindrift Institute, interestingly enough, about prayer. Hope you don't mind. Thank you for letting me roam around. You know, as a host, I seldom get to talk.
You do it beautifully.
Thank you. So as a guest, it's kind of fun to, like, connect the dots of, you know, the last 50 years of all my work or 40 years. But the Spindrift Institute, founded by the Klingbeils, a father and son Christian scientist, wanted to find out what was the most effective kind of prayer. So over a period of a decade, they did a lot of praying over a lot of life systems, mung beans and fruit flies. And what they discovered, and they did it with very practiced meditators who were able to control the alpha, the beta, the theta, the et cetera, the states of consciousness you can reach. And what they discovered was the most effective prayer is "Thy will be done." Not may the mung bean, you know, have more moisture, not may the fruit fly reproduce, not may Aunt Dorothy's arm heal, but may divine right order be restored. So this is really important for us, I think. It's a really good clue to understanding that divine right order is what connects us all. And that is what the universe and the individual life system wants to do, is establish its divine right order. So when humans say that prayer about a tree or about a frog or about a friend or a family member or even an inanimate object, what we're asking is for all the molecules, all the electrons, all the protons to come together into divine right order.
The divine right order. You said that several times. I want to write it down.
Yeah, sure enough, that seems to be what works the best, divine right order. May divine right order be established. And one of the ways you can think about it in physics is that's the love wave. You know, the love is divine right order. The particle is our intention. May Aunt Dorothy's arm be healed. May this bird fly again. May this, you know, raccoon not have a cut. May my son not be coughing so much. Versus, may my son experience divine right order. So it's a key, and that's why I try to remember to talk about it each time I'm given the opportunity, because I too feel overwhelmed at times. How could we not with what's going on the planet? You know, there's a vibrational shift. I think everyone can feel it. I think everybody's experiencing time speeding up. Things are collapsing more quickly. Astrologically, there are a lot of reasons for it. But the good news is, you know, we're meant to evolve, and we will evolve. It might be through, unfortunately, through a great deal of suffering, but that suffering has a teaching in it. And in the Kabbalah books I've written, in Hasidic Judaism, which I'm a student of, they say it's called concealed good. You know, when things don't go the way we want and we're sick and we're not feeling well and we lose our job or we get divorced or whatever it is and we're miserable and suffering, actually the greatest teachings are in those moments than, oh, I'm really happy, look at my dress, I got a pay raise, I'm happily married, everything's hunky-dory, as they used to say back in World War II, and my mother used to say that everything's hunky-dory. I think that was for the dory. I think it was on the back of the boat, but in any event. It's something that we can have faith in. You know, I was taught how to do remote viewing by Ingo Swann, to some degree, who was the creator of the protocols for the CIA's use of non-local consciousness, where they give the viewer the coordinates, longitude and latitude of location in which a person, a place, or a thing exists. And he said the hardest thing for all of us as humans is not to judge and not to classify and not categorize. And that happens to us all the time. Like when you saw the animal on the road, what am I seeing it for? What does it mean? What can I do? We start to analyze, and then sometimes we say to ourselves, well, I don't have a clue, I give up. Versus just saying, it's really interesting, and I don't have to know the answer right now.
And this goes back to what you talked about probably 3 minutes ago, because I was fascinated about the fox, and why is there not that same relationship with fox? Is it a species thing? Is it a genetic we can't breed with it? Or is there some other reason that fox is kind of sort of ostracized from that group of animals?
The fox are, you said?
The fox.
I think it's just because they had a long history of stealing chickens.
Oh.
I think it just affected the local farm and the eggs. But fox are wonderful, and they never hurt humans unless you get too close to their den. But
true,
we can very easily live with fox among us. I mean, it's the wolf and the coyote that's a little more frightening to most humans, and the wolf has been extraordinarily more demonized than just about any animal there is. And in my book,
true,
I include all these things that they used to hold and attribute to wolf. And the reason the wolf are killed is they're falsely accused of killing livestock like cattle, but most cattle die of disease or attacks from dogs or accidents. So there's a lot of disinformation that is hung on to by industry and then their local politicians and then therefore the Fish and Wildlife Service. So it's like the example of Yellowstone National Park where the buffalo are. They only allow 3,000 to stay alive, and in the last 10 years they've slaughtered like 10,000 when people have agreed to take the buffalo and not let them be killed. Anyway, we have a lot of distorted misunderstandings about how to have a balanced ecosystem. But one of the things these animals said to me is because they are all matrilineal cultures, matriarchies, that's the one thing humans have lost. They have at the center of their cultures, all of them, whether it's bear or lion or elephant or wolf or porpoise or whale or dolphin or buffalo, is the mother and its young. Humans have lost this. In fact, we see worldwide that it's mostly women, children, and nature that are the most abused. Not that men aren't also, but they do the majority of the abusing of other men as well. And they urge us to restore this ethos of care, which means a matriarchy. A matriarchy is not a socialist thing. It's not a feminist thing. It's a proper geometry in human relations that values the mother and child above all, and the society that structures itself around the happiness and wellness of the mother and the child has the happiest and most healthy society, and that we know even from studying human societies. You know, there was an interesting experience I had in Dreaming with Buffalo. It was towards at the very end of the book, and I had finished my dream work. I'd finished writing the book, and the buffalo was the last of the mammals that I wrote about, and I was standing on a mountaintop plateau with this beautiful, enormous buffalo, a brown buffalo, actually. And I knew he was like a tribal chief representing the 60 million or so buffalo we used to have grazing the North American continent. And this is what he said to me. I mean, we were standing where the range used to be, and you could see this like extraordinary broad-scale view, and this is what he said, quote, "When any one of us, human, animal, plant, or mineral, fulfills our purpose on earth, we experience the greatest love there is."
Oh. That's, I feel like I want to just take notes from you and just write down.
Get
so
the
many
book.
Things
you know,
you
get
say.
The book
yes.
and take
yes.
notes.
Yes.
Yeah, I try to write, this book in particular, I tell people, don't read it all at once. There's some stuff in it that's tough. The when you read about how we cut off bears' hands to sell them after they're being farmed for their bile and they would live 30 years, but they die at 4 from complete disease and trauma. I mean, there's some really rough stuff in here, how we break elephants in order to put them in entertainment or in labor, totally traumatize them and destroy them when they're babies so that they have no spirit. I mean, it's tragic. But in each chapter, I then go like in the bears. We talk about Charlie Russell, who's done so much to show that the grizzly bear and the black bear and all bears are really very human-friendly. We make the mistake of being violent, and because we're violent, they have to protect themselves. But most of the time,
of course,
they're not going to do anything to a human unless you're too close to their territory or you're threatening their young or they feel threatened by a species. Like bears, for instance, will sometimes run to another human and use them to run interference against another bear. They don't look at the human necessarily as, oh, they're going to kill me. It's just another species. We're the ones who, you know, have done the species entitlement. I think I started to say that. And Darwin, who was accused of having said that, actually said the reverse. He said the greatest work he ever did was showing that there was no species entitlement accorded the human. We are not more developed or evolved than animals. We just have a different purpose. They're evolved for what they do and who they are, and they are perfect, noble, emotional beings. They're the perfected astral body teacher. But they're not beneath us. They're our teachers and our helpers, and they want to help us survive by making the earth more resilient and by making their populations more resilient. Because when you have climate change, that's what you have to have. You have to have resiliency in your agriculture. And so at the end of the book, I talk about permaculture and soil remineralization. I also talk about encouraging children to use their imagination and don't discount what they tell you and what they dream about, because this is an age of prophecy, presumably that will come mostly through women and children. So when children say something, and we see it now, you know, with these amazing little souls being born such a challenging time, and they have extraordinary understandings that some of us may forget or have already forgotten. So it's very important that we encourage each other to have hope and to know that when we pray, it's a real power, and to do what each of us can within our own spectrum of life. I mean, we went through a period where we can be global citizens, but we have to be locally active, and that's where all of us have our most power and our greatest influence. So if your neighborhood is suffering from some problem, that's what you want to work on. It doesn't have to be global warming. You know, it can be that the local trash pickup isn't good. Whatever it is, what the animals are telling us is improve the life around you. And I always add, and improve the life within you. If because if we can come into self-mastery to whatever degree we're able, we then can help the earth heal because we're not constantly in an obnoxious rally of reacting. You know, we have such a reactionary culture and everybody wants everything now. But the truth is it takes generations for things to unfold, and we have to know that our efforts go beyond our own lifetime. And that we just do our best because that's what we're asked to do as incarnate beings. And each of us is very important, no matter who we are, what we have, where we live, what we know, what we don't know. We're each very important beings of light.
Well, can we? I would love for you to expand a little on the idea of that we are in the sixth extinction. I've read about this, but my knowledge is very tiny. And if you could maybe explain a little more about what it is and why it is, and what are we going
to
do about it?
Well, there's a lot of debate as to what it is and why it is, but that is what's happening. The ecosystem is so imbalanced that we're losing species every day.
Yes.
And it's been called the Anthropocene by Paul Crutzen, who's the gentleman that discovered the cofactors of the ozone hole, which Lyon said is the most important thing for us to correct, because it's leading to such terrible ultraviolet radiation and creating problems for all species on Earth and additional heating, et cetera, et cetera. They call it the Anthropocene because of the human cofactor in the acceleration of planetary change. It's not that we haven't had species extinction before. We have. And I have suggested when we look at the cycles of it, like, for instance, take the buffalo. It was a woolly mammoth. It weighed tons. That we're coming down in scale. I think what's happening is that the scale of things are being reduced, like the dragons. We used to have dragons on Earth. Now we have the Komodo dragon. That's a much smaller dragon species, but we still have the DNA. So this process of extinction, it could be to preserve some life on Earth. Certainly we're already losing so much life on Earth. Other species will evolve, maybe more suitable to a changed environment with less oxygen and, who knows, and greater heat. The scale of species may change as it did after the dinosaurs, and now we have much smaller scale species. Humans got smaller. You know, there used to be giants on the Earth, and we have skeletons to show it, and there's certainly plenty of literature. I talk about that in the book as well. Matata the Bodobo told me about the giants, and then I had to go do the research about what she told me. But they were some as tall as 30 feet. So the scale has come down. So civilizations rise and fall, and the Earth goes through ice ages, which I think we're approaching. I think we're in an interglacial age, and we're approaching an ice age. And just like when a person gets sick and they get fevers and then they become a cold cadaver, I think the superheating will lead to a super cold. And I'm not alone in that. We're getting these swings of whatever we have in the weather. It's more extreme, whether it's hot or cold. So it's an opportunity for us to decide what's of importance, because the physical world is just one form of spirit manifesting. You know, we will continue without physical bodies, but this is also an extraordinary, beautiful blue sphere in the cosmos that our obligation is to protect and preserve. And that's the bottom line. We're the stewards of this glorious planet. And we just have to do our best, whatever each of us is able to do wherever we are. If it means not buying groceries with plastic bags anymore and taking a cotton bag so you're not contributing to that problem, that helps. And you'll go, well, it's not going to make a difference, but it does make a difference, and that's my point. Each one of us who do our best in whatever way, being kind to the person we bump into at the grocery store, not running somebody off the road who's in the wrong lane, you know, all these silly little things humans do to each other, but that makes for a more violent world. So I used to do this thing in whistleblowing. I'd say, you know, when we were complaining about a dictator, I'd say, well, haven't you ever acted like a dictator in your own life? So the whole world is an outpicturing of our inner lives, which is why we have to learn to come into some self-mastery and learn to manage ourselves, whether it's anger or love or joy or overexuberance or depression, whatever it is, to understand these are just seasons in our daily life, and they come and go in the same way that there are seasons of wellness in a planet's history, and there are seasons of collapse in a person's life like there is a planet. So we're going through a sickness stage that the planet is very ill, and we really all have to do our best to tend to her. And that's what the animals are saying. So by supporting the white spirit animals, the bear, the lion, the elephant, the wolf, the buffalo, the birds, the squirrels, you know, whatever animal it is that you feel drawn to, look online, see what organizations are doing in your local community or far away. You know, send them a small donation, send them a prayer, write letters to your editor, take part in your local legislature who are passing laws about bear hunting or whatever it is. But we each are here to do the work together, and that's how I always try to close, you know, whatever talk I give, wherever I give it, is that, and it's kind of funny, I joke, we're all in this together, or we're all in this together.
But, you know, and you're right, I totally agree, but do you find that so many people feel helpless, and they don't understand that if they didn't get plastic shopping bags at the grocery, and if they donated to elephants or turtles or whatever.
Or their local dog and cat rescue. You know, we
exactly.
have millions of cats and dogs being euthanized because people keep overbreeding. So it's all the same. You know, it's really about love, 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 and having compassionate regard and coming into compassionate rapport with all life, because everything is struggling at this point. And it's just our job as sentient humans to be as kind and generous and compassionate and caring as we can be.
Well, so can I switch gears with you just a little?
Sure.
Because I want to talk about your communication with animals. Like someone has a problem with a pet and would call you, because I have friends that have utilized people who can talk to animals and get information to try and help fix whatever the issue is. And so would that be like, if I had a problem with a cat, I could call you and you could possibly communicate with my cat? I mean, that just sounds like the most amazing idea.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, but
does
you
this
can
happen
talk
often
to your cat
to you?
Too. Well, sure. And she's angry about something has been taken away from her. What did you take away from her?
My cat?
Uh-huh.
I have two. I have one that is an indoor cat, and she's a little kind of freaky.
It's
and
the indoor
my
cat.
Other cat is a boy
it's
cat, cute. And he, we call him Houdini because he does. He escapes all the time. So.
Yeah. Well, she's upset. If you didn't take it, he took it. Something has been taken from her. She's definitely annoyed. She's like, she'll be fine, and then all of a sudden she'll.
she has really taken up residence in the laundry room, and I don't know if it's the dog that bothers her or I'm not sure. I feel like you're right. We've done something to upset her because
she needs a space that she knows is hers and is protected from the other animals, whether it's dog, cat, or human. She just needs a space that's her own wherever you decide that should be. And if she likes the laundry room, maybe that's the place to do it. If
she's
still able to jump up. Does she jump up on the dryer?
Well, she does. I have a countertop that I had built that I put their food on, and so that seems to be where she stays. And
yeah, she feels safe there. You know, when we try to make animals be social, just like, you know, I'm not terribly social. If somebody said, "Well, you have to come out and go to all these parties because that's what most humans do," I'd be. So we make the mistake sometime, I think, of feeling like it's like all our children should be social, and why can't they have a conversation? No different with our animals, and they go through stages.
Oh.
Or maybe they feel insecure. You just need to spend a little special time with her without any of the other animals around. That would help.
I think that I understand what you're saying. My mother lived with us, and until her death, she was...
I think we're going to run out of time while we're talking about your cat.
Maybe, no. We can probably just talk all night. my mother lived with us until she was 80. And I mean, until she was 100, till her death. And she's been acting like this since my mother died.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's what got taken away from her. That's all she kept saying is they took it away.
Oh.
They took her away. And I don't know what it was taken away. Did she used to sleep with your mother?
Yes.
Yeah, her bed was taken
Elvis.
Away. Now the whole picture becomes clear. See, that's what happens. What we just did is an example of how an animal communicator does the work. Is you, and I generally don't talk to the person while I'm doing it. I just do a reading. I take notes, and then I talk to the person. But together, we just figured out what she was telling me. You had taken it away. It had to do with where she was sleeping, needing her space. If she misses your mother.
So do
I. Do you have anything that belonged to your mother that still has the scent of your mother on her, like a sweater?
I have a pair of pajamas.
That's what you give your cat. So you put that where your cat sleeps or where you want your cat to sleep.
Okay.
If you want your cat to sleep with you now on your bed or someplace on the sofa, take whatever that is and put that in her area and, you know, hold it on your lap for a while so she associates it with you and feeling comfortable.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you so much. That's because I've really been bothered and worried that I didn't know what to do for her. So that will that solves that little mystery. Aradia?
Excuse me?
I'm looking for Aradia. I mean, I was asking if she's still on with us.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Okay. So we're at 8 o'clock.
So you're at the next hour. And I want to thank you for having me. And I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to talk to Dawn or Sylvia, as I know she's also called. But please give her my best. And I really thank you all for having had me as your guest.
Thank you so much for being with us. You are just brilliant. We'd love to have you back.
I'd love to come back. Go to www.whitespiritanimals.com. That's www.whitespiritanimals.com. And have a lot of fun on the website.
Thank you.
And good luck with your beautiful cat. That will make her much happier.
God bless you. Thank you so much. I appreciate
you. Okay. You're welcome.
All right.
Good night.
Good night. So, Ms. Aradia.
I could listen to her talk forever.
Oh, my gosh. I could, too. That went very quickly. And let's, you know, give her, are we gonna stay on and shoot the breeze, or are we going to turn it down for the night? Because you don't sound good.
I really, first off, you need to tell everybody about Puff this year because it's next month and we haven't talked about it and we need to know who's going to be there, what the theme is, everything.
Let me do a commercial for Pagan Unity Festival. Pagan Unity Festival is held in Burns, Tennessee at Montgomery Bell State Park. On May the 17th to the 20th, which is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and on Sunday we throw you out. And this year we're having we always have special guests, but this year we're having very special guests who are coming to us from England. So Janet Farrar and Gavin Bone are our guests of honor, and they'll be flying into Nashville. We'll be picking them up at the airport, and they are going to do workshops, and they're also going to participate in what ought to be a fantastic, interesting ritual on Saturday night, because we also have Belladonna Laveau and Dusty Dion, and we have Alfred Willowhawk and Willow Wellspring, all of whom are Aquarian Tabernacle Church members, and they will be doing a ritual. All of our VIPs will be doing a ritual on Saturday night. So it ought to be quite spectacular. I'm really kind of excited, and I'm kind of fangirling a little bit on Janet Farrar because I've never met her, and I'm just ridiculously excited to meet her. And so we have about 50 workshops this year. We have everything from soup to nuts. We have our blacksmith back from last year. So if you participated in Major Onathame last year at PUS, or you didn't get to do that, you will have an opportunity to do it this year. We have 6 or 7 rituals. There will be a maypole dance sometime on Saturday, as soon as we can kind of arrange that and get the maypole up. Puff has the Traveling Fates will be with us for entertainment, and that would be Suge, Ginger, Doss, and Becca Kelso, S.J. Tucker, and each one of them will be playing Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And on Saturday, all three of them will be playing together on Saturday evening and we also have a rock and roll band, which will, and they'll be playing, oh, man, and now I can't think of their name. The word rock and the word Johnson is in there. It's not dirty, I swear to God. Gold Rock Johnson Band. I had to think a minute. We've got seances. We've got spooky tales around the fire pit. We've got drumming and singing and dancing and other craziness that we always have. We have, at last count, which was yesterday, haven't counted today, we have 50 beds. If you're interested in a bunk, you probably need to buy your tickets in pretty quick order. We have food. We have dancing. We have music. We have everything. It's a pretty awesome weekend. This will be our 21st year. So, which is an incredible milestone for anything, but for your typical pagan festival, they only last about 5 years, and we have beaten the odds. So we're still here, and we intend to continue to be here, and the park is beautiful, and we hope that everyone will come out. And if you would like to buy a ticket, and we would love for you to, please go to www.paganunityfestival.org. Tool around, you'll see the classes that are being held. Oh, the shopping. You'll see all the different stores that are going to be there offering wares. We have a huge shopping area. And so you can shop, you can eat, you can drink, you can hang out, you can, you know, go hug a tree, you can go to ritual, you can listen to the amazing three ladies that are coming to entertain you for the weekend. So we would love for everybody to come and be with us and hang out and have a beautiful weekend among the animals, which we have a lot of those at PUFF because we're on about 1,000 acres. And so we get to kind of hang out with the wildlife as well. So www.paganunityfestival.org, May 17th through the 20th. We hope that you will join us. How's that?
I'm so excited
for my commercial
about it. It was awesome. I plan on going for a day trip this year on Saturday.
Oh, good. Oh, good. I'm glad that you will.
Yeah, it gives me time. Like, I can get away from the shop.
Yeah, but you've got to. You've got to give yourself some time. I have two other things to announce.
Yes.
One is which my newest book, A Death in the Family, is now available on Amazon. And it's available in book form, and it's also available on the e-reader, and it's a death in the family. You have to put Tish Owen in there to get my book. So that's available. I'm also, so many people over the years wanted to do a year and a day class, and they couldn't. They live in a remote area. There is no one teaching it, and so they have to kind of rely on books and the internet and whatnot. To the point where I have kind of bit the bullet, and I will be doing, starting on April 11th, I will be doing a year and a day class. It will be done remotely. It will be done over Zoom. And if you want to find that, you will, where did I put it? You have to go to Facebook page, Goddess in the Moon, and the announcement will be on there. The charge for it, the how you sign up, everything. And if you get confused, as I often do when I'm doing technical things, you can call me or send me an email. You can call me at area code 615-251-9833. Or you can drop an email and say, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Could you please explain this to goddessandmoon@gmail.com. And so this is called, it's called, if you look on Facebook, you can look on the Goddess and the Moon. And what will come up is Year and a Day for Seekers. And it will take you through the date. It will explain some things to you. If you have questions, I'll be happy to answer them. So many people live in areas where there are not bookstores. They can't find covens or groups or anything else to be able to learn and to be able to get to educate in the way of the craft. And so I'm going to try this crazy thing, and I'm going to see if I can punker Zoom. And I hope that everybody, I hope to Goddess, that everybody who participates remotely will forgive my incredible inexperience and lack of expertise in running this thing. So this is my first kind of Zoom meeting. Oh, my God. So I'm kind of nervous about it. So
that's it.
That's all I know.
You're going to do great.
Well, I'm going to do my very best to do great. I've been teaching this class and refining it for about 20 years now, so I think I ought to be okay. It's the whole, I got to put on makeup and do my hair for this thing. not like the thing you and I are doing, right?
I look like a trash panda at the moment.
Well, I've
There's
had a long
no
day,
way
so
you're putting
I might
on
look,
camera.
I might pull it kind of like a trash panda myself. But you've been sick, but so how are things at your store? Can we talk about your store? I've been running my mouth for the last 11 minutes, so not like I'm counting.
Well, right now we're in a lull between magic sets that are being released. But in a couple weeks, we're having a new set come out. This year marks the 25th anniversary of Magic the Gathering. And they are releasing a set called Dominaria, which was the first ever set released in Magic. And it's a big deal in the Magic community. And we're really looking forward to seeing what can come out of it. And today we had a store championship. And I want to say on air that I am very proud of my dear friend and I'm trying to find words to say it because it's not very well known that we're together, but a particular somebody that is in my polyamorous relationship has made it to one of the top positions in the store championship, and I'm really proud of them. And
yay.
I'm not going to name names.
Yay.
My boyfriend did
That's
good today,
because...
and I'm happy.
Well, I can't believe Magic the Gathering is 25 years old. God, I feel old. Jiminy Christmas. Of course, I am old.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem. let's see, what else? I have a grandbaby coming.
Ooh.
I don't think I've told you that.
No.
I have a grandbaby coming, and my 44-year-old daughter will be giving birth to a new grandson. This will be my 1, 2, 3, my fourth grandson. And he is due to arrive on this planet May the 11th. And so I told her that she had to really make sure that due date was nailed because, Puff. And she's like, I'm not doing this for your convenience. And I'm like, well, of course you are, because everything is my convenience. So anyway, we're pretty excited. She's doing very well. We expect mother and son to do quite well and then sail through this birth experience. And so, the other kids are excited, which, is awesome that they're excited. And this is her first child, so it will be quite an experience for her.
Oh, I know.
I can't wait. So excited.
I adore new babies.
I do, too. It's so funny because it's been a minute since we've had a grandbaby, right? And so we're pretty excited. And he doesn't have a name yet. right now his name is Lucky Knuckles, and I'm hoping that they'll pick something else.
It's a little odd.
Well, you gotta call him something, right? My 16-year-old grandchild, for about 3 months before she was born, her name was Christmas Shabazz. So, you know, she got a better name when she got here. So, yeah, we're pretty excited, and I'm continuing to raise money for my cousin Chad, who is dying of brain cancer, and we're trying to kind of help them keep a roof over their heads, and so that also is on my Facebook page in a lot of different places. But he is, at this point, having good days and bad days. They're about equal at this point, and so we just, we send him a lot of prayer and energy to get him through this horrible ordeal. So we have one family member who will be leaving us, and we have a new family member who will be joining us. So it is that circle of life that we all have to deal with, right?
It is bittersweet.
Yeah, it is. It really is. So anyway, that's all I know at this point, except for I'm really amazed. Can we talk about the cat for just a minute? Go back to my poor little cat. Are you amazed by what she said about my cat? You what?
I was kind of blown away. Because you don't really talk about your cats a lot. But once you guys talked it out, I was like, well, that makes a lot of sense that she's missing
totally.
Her mama.
There's so many times that I would come into mother's room in the morning, and the dog, of course, is in the bed with her, and there'd be a cat perched on her dresser, and there'd be another cat perched on her nightstand, and, you know, they would just kind of hang out with Lorraine. And so that weird behavior of her hiding, she literally hides out in the laundry room. She almost never comes out of that room. And that weird behavior started when mother died. So I just found a pair. I had donated all of mother's, you know, what do you give an old woman? You give her pajamas or candy. And so mother had probably, I'm not exaggerating, 40 pairs of pajamas. And we have a nursing home that is for indigents. And I called them and asked them if they would take a donation of gently used pajamas, and they were delighted. So we took a huge box of pajamas and donated them. I felt really good about it. And the other day, I don't even know where I found them now, but I was rummaging around and found one of her favorite pairs that I just ran across of her pajamas. So I'm going to give those to the cat. I'm going to see if I can make her more comfortable. So I don't know. It took me a minute to go, what have we taken away from her? What have we taken? Oh my God, we took the old woman away from her. Wow. I'm kind of blown away. And I'm going to have to get her book. Do you have it written down? I know you do. I don't. I didn't write it down. Her website and the book, The White Spirit Animal, White Spirit Animals, because
The book's called White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change. Her name is Dr. J. Zahara Meyerhoff Hieronymus, one of the most badass last names ever heard. I'm hoping it's her real name.
There used to be a woman in Nashville. She's passed. And she was a theater critic here. And her last name was Hieronymus. Say it again.
Hieronymus.
I can't say it. That name, that one, you know. But yeah, that's the only other person I've ever heard with that name.
It's Greek or Roman? I want to say Roman.
Like
the old Latin.
I'm not even going to hazard a guess. So.
Well, her website is zoharaonline.com, and it's spelled Z-O-H-A-R-A online.com, and there's a ton of stuff on this website. I'm going to start listening to her radio broadcasts, which are Sunday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on WCBM 680 a.m. in the Baltimore area. But you can go to 21stcenturyradio.com, and it's 21stcenturyradio.com, and you can listen to the archives and see what guests are coming up. You can check on her other books and her articles, and this thing is just full of goodies.
Wow. Okay. I'm officially blown away, and we'll have to have her back and ask her more questions. But yeah, I'm getting the book. I didn't have a chance to read it because it's Puff, and so I don't get to do anything for the next 5 weeks except Puff, except for the baby shower. I got to go to the baby shower on Sunday. So.
Right.
So yeah, I know. I've ordered all the crap for all the little decorations and candy, and had such a good time shopping for that. Anyway, I imagine that we probably should call it a night, and you can rest your voice, and I can go have some dinner.
Yeah, me too. I'm starving.
I bet you are. Well, all right, take care of the cold. Please.
I will. I will talk to you later, Tish.
You take care of yourself, and good night, everyone. Thank you for listening. I hope that you enjoyed our show as much as Aradia and I enjoyed our show.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Good night, honey. See you next time.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay,
bye-bye.
I'm going to bring the show down with a song that I think fits this whole thing indomitably. I Don't Speak Human by Omnia from their album Music. I don't have any confirmation on our next guest or when exactly the next show will be, but we will post everything up on our website. Take care, everybody, and have a good night.
Deep within the shadows, I'm the hungry wolf you fear. But I can see that you're the only evil creature here.
Before you came, we lived in peace, but you have brought us death.
I sing my pain up to the moon, but it's a waste of breath. 'Cause I don't speak human. You can't understand what I'm saying. I don't speak human. You can't understand what I'm saying. Upon a wing of flying thing, to you I seem so small. But I look down on what you've done, my raven. Can't understand what I'm saying.
You're saying